I'm Brian Larson, and on this special episode of KUNC's Colorado Edition, we're talking about water. Our state is growing fast, and with that comes new demand for water. Cities need it, but most of it is owned by farmers. Coming up, we'll explore how buy and dry is impacting northern Colorado.
The municipalities are going to grow, and they're going to need more water. And we see growth from population, so where's the balance? I wish I could tell you what that is, but it will always be, you're going to always pull water from agriculture to go to municipality use.
The availability of water is also impacting the price of building new homes in the area. And here's a question for you. Would you drink purified wastewater? Well, some communities are looking into that possibility for the future, while in the short term, one Denver brewery is using the water to make beer.
It's very crispy, refreshing, clean, nice dry finish, exactly what you'd expect out of a very classic example of an American Pilsner.
But first, a strange phenomenon has been happening in cities throughout the West. Populations have been booming since the 1990s, but overall, water use is staying the same, or in some cases, it's actually going down. As KUNC's Luke Runyon reports, a lot of credit for the savings should go to the toilet.
Teresa McFarland lives in an historic two-story home in Longmont, Colorado, with her husband and two kids. Built in 1928, it has all of the vintage touches. Hardwood floors, big windows, wood detailing, and one really old toilet.
You don't think about it. It's one of those daily things that you just do without really thinking about how much water.
A little stamp on the bowl says it was built in the 1950s. McFarland points it out to her four-year-old daughter, Althea.
That toilet has been there longer than Daddy and I have been alive.
Yeah.
Probably longer than Grandma and Grandpa have been alive.
That's why McFarland started looking for a replacement. She called up a local conservation group called Resource Central and asked if they could help her put in a new, more water-friendly model. Nika Sundlin oversees the group's Flush for the Future program. She's here today to install the latest in toilet technology.
We guesstimate this one's using about 5 gallons of flush.
Oh, that's incredible.
The new one uses less than one.
It's amazing.
It's 0.8 gallons per flush. So you're going to be saving probably 4 gallons of water per flush.
The city of Longmont also has an interest in getting rid of the McFarland family's water-guzzling toilet. The city, along with other local water providers, subsidizes the cost of installing high-efficiency toilets. Sundlin says it's an easy switch with a big payoff. With other conservation programs, you first have to convince people to use less water.
But a toilet is a toilet, and so it's no behavior change whatsoever. You just literally save water with every flush.
A toilet uses more water than any other fixture in a home. More than your washing machine, your 20-minute shower, and way more than your dishwasher. The average person flushes 5 times per day.
Most people don't realize that if their toilet is more than 10 or 15 years old, replacing their toilet, upgrading their toilet, is one of the most impactful ways they can save water.
Neil Lurie is president of Resource Central.
Can save between 200 and 300,000 gallons of water over the life of that toilet.
Back in the 1990s, Congress passed a law that created national standards for water use. It mandated toilets only use about 1.5 gallons for each flush. For the plumbing industry, it was a huge deal.
Oh, absolutely. It was an extremely watershed moment, no pun intended.
One of the people who helped write the low flush rules was Pete DeMarco. He's with the International Association of Plumbing and Mechanical Officials.
And it wasn't just toilets where flows were being reduced, but shower heads, kitchen faucets, lavatory faucets, and urinals were also being regulated.
DeMarco says this is why cities have been able to grow and still keep their water use in check. Indoor use dropped 22% nationwide between 1999 and 2016, much of that due to just swapping out old fixtures. And in recent years, some states with water scarcity problems have passed even tighter regulations on how much water toilets can use.
And so you basically have these high-efficiency toilets now as a matter of course. You cannot go out in a store in Colorado or California and buy an old toilet.
Drew Beckwith is with the environmental organization Western Resource Advocates. He says conservationists have been a victim of their own success. With national standards in place, there's not much more they can do to limit water use inside homes.
We've sort of done our business with respect to toilets, and it's time to, you know, maybe get off the pot and move on to outdoor water use, which is more, I see, the focus of urban water efficiency today.
Back at the McFarland home, their brand new toilet is hooked up, and the water is flowing. The honor of first flush goes to McFarland's daughter, Althea.
Check it out, there's this new button. Can I show you? Give it a shot.
In Longmont, Colorado, I'm Luke Runyon.
If you're new to Colorado, you may not have heard of buy and dry. Basically, it's when cities buy up water rights from other users to support their growth. And in the agriculture-rich areas of northern Colorado, including Weld County, that water is mainly coming from farmers. We wanted to know more about where things stand within the county. KUNC's Matt Bloom looked at the population numbers for us. And Matt, when we say that this area is growing fast, just what exactly does that mean?
The towns of Erie, Firestone, and Windsor have seen the biggest gains percentage-wise. And according to the U.S. Census Bureau, which just released some new population numbers, more than 25,000 people have moved to Windsor since 2010. That's a 35% increase in just 7 years. That is huge.
So here's the big question. With limited supplies of water, can they continue to support such a high growth rate?
Dennis Wagner is the one in charge of securing that water for Windsor, so I'll let him answer that question.
With growth in this area, we're all competing for that water. And so the supply isn't getting any bigger, but the demand is.
Right now, they have enough. But over the next 20 years, he says they'll need four times as much water as they currently have to support all the new subdivisions. They're on the books as purchasing water straight from farmers as recently as last month.
Those particular farms, I'm not sure what's happened to those farms, whether they still have enough water rights to irrigate or whether they've reduced the farming acreage on those farms. But we haven't specifically bought farms to own them and to take the water off of them.
But that might happen because of the competition?
It could happen.
He was uncomfortable when I brought up that last buy and dry question. But this gives you a sense of what water managers like Wagner, not just in Windsor, are dealing with along the Front Range.
Okay, so that's a snapshot of the urban side of things. Thank you, Matt.
Thanks, Brian.
But we also wanted to know why farmers are willing to part with such a key component of their business. Esther Honig covers food and agriculture for KUNC and Harvest Public Media. You spoke to a dairy farmer in Milliken, which is just down the road from Windsor, who just sold some of his water rights.
Yes, Timothy Bernhardt's farm has been in the family since the 1920s, and water is vital to his operation. Every one of his 900 dairy cows drinks between 50 to 100 gallons of water every day.
The municipalities are going to grow, and they're going to need more water. And we see growth from population. So where's the balance? I wish I could tell you what that is, but it will always be you're going to always pull water from agriculture to go to municipality use.
He says selling water rights has a lot to do with getting older. Bernhardt is 63, his brother is 70, and both are thinking about retirement. And his children are not interested in carrying on the dairy business.
I think you just reach a point at certain times in life. I think if you're young and you're starting out, yeah, that water is more so. But then it's like, okay, it's just another asset. When you're getting older, I think it's another asset you have.
Bernhardt's bottom line was another factor. Milk prices are 10% lower than last year, so he and his brother recently sold nearly $5 million worth of water to the town of Milliken.
Some compelling reasons there. We also know that the Bernhardts are also keeping a lot of their water rights. But what about the farmers that have no other choice and they have to sell off all of their water assets?
Some cities offer the option to rent water back from the city. Of course, that's not a permanent solution. The city might come one day and say, we need to take that water back for our residents.
Esther, thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
It's estimated that more than 1.2 million people will be living in northern Colorado by 2050. So what will all this drawing do for the region? KUNC's Luke Runyon is here to help us with that question.
Hi, Brian.
As it turns out, we can already see the impact of by and dry in southern Colorado.
Yeah, some water managers are already really troubled by this huge amount of water flowing from farms to the Front Range, because with it, it also means a movement of power and economic activity from rural areas to cities.
And if you go to the Arkansas Basin and drive around, you'll see the net result of that, which is dry land down there and not irrigated farmland. And the landscape looks fundamentally different than it did when it was being irrigated.
Sean Cronin is director of the St. Vrain and Left Hand Water Conservancy District. It's a water management agency mostly in Boulder County. And he says the Arkansas Basin acts as a cautionary tale.
If you're looking at it regionally in terms of the overall economy for Colorado, having a diverse economy with vibrant cities and agriculture, and you find that maybe it's shifting from one way or another and we're losing some of our diversification, then I think it's cause for concern.
So if water managers like Cronin are concerned about it, why does it keep happening? And are there any other options or solutions?
Well, it's pretty simple. It's because it's the easiest and cheapest option right now for cities to find additional water supplies. But Cronin and a handful of other water managers recently started a conversation about what it would take to allow Front Range cities to keep growing without draining farms in the process. And it looked like at least three, maybe four big new reservoirs all along the South Platte River to the state line with Nebraska. But he makes it really clear that these are preliminary discussions.
Right now, the Colorado Big Thompson Project and its reservoirs supply a lot of water to the Northern Front Range. It was originally built for ag, but cities own a majority of those water rights, which is what we're talking about, by and dry. And projects like this, Luke, they just don't happen overnight.
If they end up happening at all, and in this case, it's a pretty big if. So we're talking perhaps another generation before this new solution would be up and running. And in the meantime, there would likely be a lot more water moving off farmland to keep Colorado's cities well-watered.
That was KUNC's Luke Runyon. Esther Honig also contributed to our discussion on by and dry. As we heard, growing communities like Windsor are scrambling to obtain water for all the new subdivisions and homes they're anticipating over the next 20 years. So we sent KUNC's Matt Bloom back out to see how the price of water is impacting new home construction.
As Northern Colorado's population grows, along with the need for homes, buyers are paying more than they ever have for water rights, especially for new homes.
Hello.
Hey, Nancy and Stephen Innes just moved into their new Tuscan-style residence in Greeley. It's packed with lots of water-saving features, like this faucet that turns on with just a wave of your hand.
So water conservation is even here in the kitchen.
But they had to pay an additional $38,000 just to get the water flowing in their home. That's pretty normal for new properties in Greeley, according to a 2015 city survey, and it's something they budgeted for.
It was a huge factor because I know I watched the movie The Big Short, and at the very end, they asked Christian Bale, okay, what's your next big venture? What did he say? Do you remember?
The water, right?
Water.
And residents aren't the only ones feeling the pinch.
This is where I meet with customers and talk about building their dreams.
Jay Jensen is the man behind the Innes' dream home. He's an old-school builder who still draws his blueprints by hand. He says many of his customers have no idea how big a factor water is in the cost of a new home.
They all think, oh, we'll spend $200,000 on a house. Well, you're more than likely going to spend $40,000 to $60,000 before you even start building.
He says it's become a new barrier to ownership for some people, and that he's seen some clients walk away from a project.
As a builder, you know, we have to pass it on, you know, to the consumer. As the cost of water goes up, the cost of a house goes up. That's bottom line.
I spoke with several developers, both large and small, and they all said the same thing. Northern Colorado residents are paying more because cities and counties are squeezed for water rights. Bob Sutton is a longtime realtor in Fort Collins.
So Fort Collins continues to grow. We have the same amount of water to work with that we've had for many, many years. And so it's just a simple supply and demand.
And it's not just new homes that are being affected.
If you have a house on one side of the street that was built 10 years ago, and their water tap was $17,000 or $18,000, and you'd go to build a new one across the street, and now it's $32,000, you effectively raise the older home by the same amount of money because the value of the water tap changes as the market rate changes.
Cities and towns know how difficult it is to compete for water rights, and they don't want it to scare off potential developers. Windsor has recently changed its policy to give them a break.
We will allow you to pay up to 50% of your raw water requirements in the form of cash.
Dennis Wagner is the head of engineering for the town's public works department. He says it's proven to be a very popular option.
So a lot of developers are doing that because, first of all, it's getting harder and harder to find water rights. And so anytime they can pay cash instead of going out and trying to find it on their own, they will do that.
Many communities like Greeley are considering or already have similar policies in place. That doesn't necessarily make things less expensive for residents and builders like Jay Jensen, but it does make it easier to build.
Okay. Good boy.
Jensen brings his golden retriever, Wally, with him to every project site. Today, he's in a neighborhood on the east side of Greeley. He points to the water meter pit in the front yard.
So the water now comes up to this pit, but we don't have a meter in it yet. That when we do set it, it will go through the meter and into the house.
The cost of tapping into this one in particular, $36,000. Jensen says back when his company first started building homes in 1984, the average price was just $7,000.
More people using a finite resource.
Yeah, more people wanting the same thing.
For KUNC, I'm Matt Bloom in Greeley.
So between growing populations and changing climate conditions, water sources are getting harder to come by and maybe downright impossible to obtain in the future. Even now, communities are having to get creative, sometimes purifying sewage into drinking water. Now, I know that sounds gross to some, and that's exactly the problem with this process. As KUNC's Ray Ellen Bichelle reports, no matter how clean the water is, there is still the ick factor to deal with.
Paul Rosin is a psychologist at the University of Pennsylvania, and for the last 30 years or so, he's been studying disgust, why people think things are gross. In one experiment, he asked people, would they put on a sweater that Hitler had worn?
And almost everybody says no.
So then Rosin asked people, how about if he thoroughly cleaned the sweater, or dyed it to look different, or even unraveled the yarn and made it into a new one?
And most people don't want anything to do with it, even if you do all that stuff.
But there was something that did get people to reconsider.
Mother Teresa.
If Mother Teresa put on the sweater first, then some people would consider putting it on too. That study might sound like the stuff of academic ivory towers, but
it really caught the attention of the water industry.
That's Brent Haddad. He's a water resources economist at the University of California, Santa Cruz. Haddad says water engineers had come up with amazing ways to turn sewage into clean, drinkable water. It was like finding a way to turn trash into gold.
And the public would have nothing to do with it.
So Haddad reached out to Rosin to figure out how they could conquer people's squeamishness. They ended up doing a series of studies together. And here's what they found.
Well, there's two strategies. One is tell them they've been drinking toilet water all their lives. Your toilet water goes out in the ocean, so does everybody else's toilet water, and then it's coming back in rain.
And what, he says, do you think river water is? A lot of it is just treated sewage from towns upstream. But that tactic, the whole world is gross tactic, doesn't work for everyone. Others need help ignoring the water's gross past. Haddad says we do this mental trick all the time, like when we sleep in hotel rooms.
There's a really good chance that that pillow was in places and in contact and having experiences that would just be appalling to the next person who comes to the room.
But, he says, in our heads, we tell ourselves, the cleaning crew came through. Everything's clean.
And we're perfectly fine sleeping on that bed. And we frame out any history of that hotel room.
Haddad says to frame out the sewage's history, it helps to explain to people exactly how it gets purified. The tech exists to make it safe and drinkable straight away. But he says most of the time, treated sewage goes back into nature first, like an aquifer or a stream, and mixes with other water. Then it gets pulled back out and retreated again for drinking. He says the idea of the water spending time in nature helps people ignore its less appealing past, just like they can ignore the hotel room's past.
And so people can easily say, oh, well, I'm getting the fresh stuff.
Another thing that helps is to show people that it's safe by pointing to other people who drink purified wastewater, like astronauts on the International Space Station. Their drinking water gets purified from all sorts of stuff: breath, sweat, urine.
Their game. Otherwise, they don't go up there.
Urgent need can also speed up the process, like a severe drought in West Texas that led the city of Big Spring to turn sewage into drinking water all in one go. No nature time necessary. At some point, people had to just drink it. And that's the thinking here at Declaration Brewing Company in Denver. Because while there might not be one single Mother Teresa for recycled water, beer comes pretty darn close.
What are you drinking?
Centurion.
Brewery founder Mike Blandford takes a seat on the patio with a freshly poured Pilsner in front of him. It's made with recycled water.
It's very crispy, refreshing, clean, nice dry finish. Exactly what you'd expect out of a very classic example of an American Pilsner.
Spokespeople with Denver Water say the city could be drinking recycled water in about 40 years. And less than an hour's drive south of this brewery, the town of Castle Rock is currently upgrading its water treatment plant to render drinking quality water from sewage by 2020.
It's absolutely the wave of the future. I mean, this is, it's the right thing.
Blandford and his colleagues at Declaration Brewing want to help people prepare for that future before they run into urgent need, like Big Spring, Texas. And easing them in gently with a recycled Pilsner just might do the trick.
In Denver, I'm Ray Ellen Bichelle.
Well, that's going to do it for our special water episode of KUNC's Colorado Edition. Our show was produced and edited by me, Brian Larson. Aaron O'Toole and Ashley Jeffcoat also contributed to the episode. The story on the Ick Factor was edited by the Mountain West Bureau. Our opening music is Remember Me by Colorado musician Kalatana. Our outro is Good Grief by Ryan Little. Other music featured in this episode comes from The Forest Robots, Kevin MacLeod, and Poddington Bear. If you like what you heard, subscribe and leave us a review. You can find us on iTunes, the Google Play Store, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.